Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Center for Good Neighborliness here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, a listener named Jim sent me a story this week.
No last name, I'm just a Jim?
Well, his last name is at Gmail. But he wrote about a wonderful barbecue he attended last summer.
Oh, is this like a heartwarming tale?
It is to me. Anyway, Jim says, as the coals from our barbecue burned down, our host passed out marshmallows and long roasting forks. Just then, two fire trucks roared by, sirens blaring, lights flashing. They stopped at a house right down the block. All 12 of us raced out of the backyard, down the street, where we found the owners of the blazing house standing by helplessly. They glared at us with looks of disgust. Suddenly, we realized why. We were all still holding our roasting forks with marshmallows on them.
Well, that's downright neighborly, isn't it?
I love it.
Well, look, if you're feeling tempted to roast marshmallows over your burning car, we can help. But call us if you'd like. We'll try to talk you down. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Emily. I'm calling from Long Island.
Hi, Emily. Hi. Do we need to roast your car?
Yes, absolutely. I'm freezing. I'm not originally from New York. I'm from the South, and I'm freezing. So, yeah, you do.
How long have you been up north?
Only a year.
Go back.
It takes at least a decade for that part of your brain to die, so you forget how.
My feet are still frozen.
Yeah, it starts with the feet. It's working its way up. Anyway, how can we help?
Well, I have a my husband has a 1996 Volvo 960, and he just had the brakes replaced, and I thought that this would solve the problem when he had the brakes replaced, but it didn't, and our mechanic didn't say anything about it, and it's still going on.
Oh.
When you brake, it makes a sound as if air is coming out of a tire or like a
A hissing? Could you describe it as a hissing sound?
Yeah, it's a hissing, and if you push on the brakes really, really hard, almost to the floor, it'll go away.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, we know what it is.
Oh.
But and this fellow didn't know what it is or didn't hear it?
He didn't hear it. He didn't say anything about it. And
you didn't tell him. You didn't say
didn't
that this was
him.
Your primary concern.
Well, we just went in for a total tune-up and part of the brakes. We just said we need new brakes. We know we need new brakes. Put them in. And we thought it would resolve the problem, but it didn't.
Had you been to this place before?
Yes, yes. And he does, you know, all of our family's cars, and we trust him really, really well. I mean, we like the guy a lot.
Did you when you talk to him on the phone, do you have to yell?
maybe a little, yes.
Hello, Jim! We need the Volvo fixed! Well, it may be that whoever test drove the car, and I would hope that somebody test drove the car both before the repair and afterwards.
Okay. But evidently not.
Well, we make sure that we have two test drives with every car, because the last thing we want is for a customer to leave with more noises than he came in with.
That happens once in a while.
And this just happens to be the loudest one at this point.
Yeah. So whoever test drove this car before and after should have noticed that what's wrong is that your vacuum brake booster is leaking.
Vacuum brake booster?
Yes. There's a device called the power brake booster
that
uses engine vacuum to magnify or multiply the power, or the force, rather, that you supply to the brake pedal when you're trying to stop the car. And it makes your car stop with less effort on your part.
Oh.
But yours is leaking. The diaphragm is leaking air.
Okay.
So that it's sucking air, and it's not supposed to be hissing, because the hiss means there's a breach in this rubber diaphragm.
There's a hole somewhere.
Yeah,
hole.
So you need a new one.
Okay. Would this have any reason why the engine light could be on, too?
It could be, because the engine light might be on, the vacuum leak. You don't hear the leak until you step on the brake?
Until you step on the brake.
Well,
as I mentioned, there's a lot of noises on this
call, though. Any new noises?
You know.
When there are so many noises, you can't figure out what one of them is.
Oh, exactly. No, it's hopeless. It's a lost cause.
Did you ever drive with me?
Well, anyway, I would go back. The check engine light may be on for a different reason. Is that since the noises occurred?
Check engine light kind of goes in and out, so we don't really pay too much attention to it.
I suspect that's unrelated.
Okay.
My guess is that it has something to do with maybe a bad oxygen sensor.
That's what the mechanic said, too.
Okay, so you probably should change that in the interest of the planet.
Okay,
But the immediate problem is that you need a new booster.
Okay, great.
And he should have heard this.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but maybe he was listening to the other noises, too. Who knows?
Well, he might have been wearing his iPod when he was test driving the car. We also insist that our guys turn the radio off when they test drive a car.
Absolutely, although this isn't, you know, like your stroll down the street with your radio blasting kind of car.
Mm-hmm. No, you never know. Anyway, good luck, Emily.
Thanks so much.
See you later.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. My name's Greg. I live in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
What's going on, man?
Here's what's going on. I've got a 1996 Honda Civic, and I was recently in the process of changing the timing belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was putting on the new water pump, and I broke a bolt off while I was putting
on. Oh, one of those four little bolts that holds the pump in?
Mm-hmm. Now, luckily, it's the one kind of on the top right, so it's probably the easiest one for me to get to.
Yeah, yeah. And you broke it by over-tightening it.
Yep. Yeah. I was using a torque wrench.
Well, that was the first mistake.
So now you have to get it off, and there's nothing to grab anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you taken the water pump off?
The water pump is off.
So I want to just know one thing. How long did you... Where were you doing this? In your own garage?
In my driveway.
In your driveway,
yeah.
So how long did you sit there on that milk box that you were sitting on and weep?
And say, oh, what did I do?
Oh, it's not over.
It's not over. Okay. Oh, there's more?
So I went down to the hardware store and I bought a little bolt extractor and easy outer.
Yeah.
It looks like a little tapered drill bit.
Yeah.
And I got a little flexible kind of drill attachment, you know, that kind of looks like a little wire that's coiled up.
I
drilled out a hole in the bolt and I tapped out that easy out in there.
Uh-huh. Did you really?
And I think this is when I made my next big mistake, which is that I tried to unscrew it before the easy out was fully in there.
Oh.
And the easy out broke.
You broke the easy out inside the block.
Of course he did.
Oh, Greg. Well,
yeah. And do they have, go back to the store and say, do you have an easy out for an easy out?
For those who don't know, an easy out is a thing that you screw into a broken bolt and it helps to extract the broken bolt by actually acting like a bolt. But you're not supposed to break the easy out. And those easy outs are made out of extraordinarily hard steel. You may have discovered already that you can't drill the easy out.
I've tried to kind of drill, but the second I start drilling, it'll just jump right off of there.
That's right. Uh-huh. Because it's a very, very hard surface, and you can't even get a center punch hole in this thing. Let me just go. Can we go back about six steps, just for anyone else who's listening that may have done this? Before you went to the hardware store to buy the easy out and the drill and now you have to buy the engine hoist and all that, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh, no.
That bolt probably would have backed out with your finger.
That's what someone else had told me.
It will.
Yeah.
When a bolt breaks because the threads are seized to whatever it's screwed into, then you need the easy out or the drill or whatever. But when a bolt breaks like you broke it, a perfectly good bolt was getting screwed in and you just over-torqued it, all you did was snap the head off. The rest of the bolt is in the hole, and it would have walked right out of there. Had you been able to put a piece of chewing gum on the end of your finger and pushed it onto that bolt, you would have been able to turn the chewing gum and extract that broken piece. You're probably feeling real good about it.
Unfortunately, it's too late to try that now.
It is too late. It is too late. But in the future, because we know you're a bolt breaker. Once a bolt breaker, always a bolt breaker. That's why you were using the torque wrench, because you know you can't trust yourself. Greg.
There's actually two sizes of bolts that attach to the water pump, and I think what I did wrong is I was using the longer bolt instead of the shorter bolt.
You may have. Oh, okay.
One of them is 22 millimeters, and one is, I think, 30 millimeters.
Yeah, so if you had the 30-millimeter bolt, it could have bottomed out, in which case you probably wouldn't have gotten it out in the manner I described. But you might have. But that's all water over the dam at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, where are you going to buy the engine hoist? So now you have to try to break the easy out, and that's the easiest thing to do. Rather than try to drill it out, you have to shatter it.
Okay.
And the best way to shatter it probably
is with a bomb.
Yeah. So this is a 90. You know, you could always just load that water pump up with gas and cement and three bolt it. You know, you could try that, although it's risky.
I wouldn't do it.
So what you need to do then is try to get this thing out as best you can. But unfortunately, you're in a spot where it's hard to work. You can't swing a hammer. In desperation, you may decide to pull the engine.
Oh, boy. It's hard to believe that you could start something that was so simple and end up with a new car loan.
But this is a 96 Civic. You've probably changed the timing belt and the water pump before.
I haven't.
You haven't. Well, you'll never do this job again.
It was my first time.
All right, so now you got to try. I would try to shatter the easy out. But the best thing to do at this point may be to cry uncle.
Okay.
And take it someplace. And when they're done laughing and howling and ridiculing you, then maybe they can get the easy out of there. Sometimes if you bang on the easy out enough with a sharp punch and a hammer, you can wiggle it loose enough or break a piece of it off so that then you can get it out.
Okay.
Okay, boy, this is and you can't get a needle-nose pliers in there at all, can you? To try to grab the two flutes?
Kind of less than flush. It's deep down in there.
Greg. So do you think you're going to try to take the engine out? Because if you are, we'll fly out there.
We'd love to see it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. You have to take. Do you have another car?
I don't have another car. I have.
You have a friend whose car you can borrow for like six, 8 weeks.
You think anyone is going to lend him a car?
No. He might be all right driving.
Oh no.
Well, I would take the engine out. But first, take it someplace and have them look at it. And if they say they have to pull the engine out to do it adequately, then you may want to do it yourself. It will be a growth experience for you.
Oh yeah.
Think how many other things you can break. Good, the good thing is, Greg, you're still laughing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
You're trying. I know. The tears are close.
Half laugh, half cry.
Good luck, and if we can help in any way, call us.
I will.
All right. See you, Greg.
Good luck.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy. He's on the verge. He wants to cry. But that's... You know,
it's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes a simple thing gets...
How can you turn simple into impossible? It's just bingo.
Oh, it happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
Just like
the
show. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. My name is Rebecca from Columbia, South Carolina.
Do you have a nickname or do we call you Rebecca?
You can call me Red.
Red?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Columbia. We'll call you Rebecca. Okay, what's going on, Rebecca?
Okay, I have a 2000 Hyundai Elantra. And a few weeks ago, it wouldn't start. So it was suggested to me that I try dumping it. So I did that, and it started up fine. No problem for the next few days. Started up, and again, had the same problem. So I tried dumping it, and it started up. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence jumping it worked, but I had the battery tested, and they said it was fine. So anyway, yesterday, I tried jumping it. It didn't work at all, wouldn't even start. And today, now it's trying to start. The engine's trying to turn over, but it won't quite make it.
Mm. Well, the good news is it's the beginning of the year, and you probably have a lot of sick days accumulated that you haven't used yet. So
yeah.
you can use those because you're going to need them when you don't show up at work. You have to make up an excuse.
Well, better than sick days, actually. I'm out of school, and I'm jobless. So.
Oh, nice.
You've got infinite.
Plenty of free time to deal with this.
Infinite sick days.
So
too bad you're not close to Portland, Oregon. You could team up with Greg. He could probably have that starter motor out in a minute. Cause that's what you need. You need a starter. And,
okay.
And the reason the jumping works is that the starter probably has a bad connection either on the solenoid or perhaps on the commutator where the brushes are. And when you hook up the jumper battery and you put more current through, the bad connection works. Because it's got extra juice going to the starter motor, and it'll work that one time. And if you turn the key off and try to start it with just the regular 12 volts and 450 amps that your battery has, it's not enough.
Okay.
You know, so you could put a new starter in, or you could just buy an extra battery and Trying to place it on the hood to put it. No, but eventually, like you said, the jumping won't work.
Okay, yeah, it didn't yesterday, so.
Yeah, and I would take it someplace, and if they can reproduce the condition, sometimes a wrap on the starter with a wooden, you know, broom handle or something, oddly enough, will be enough to jolt it and get it to crank. And
okay.
That's a very simple test, and if it, while you're holding the key to the crank position, i.e. trying to start it, if someone belts the starter...
And it starts.
It starts, and it's almost a certainty that it's a bad connection inside the starter.
Easy enough.
Okay.
And you're out of work, so you might as well go out and buy a few $100 worth of tools and tackle this job yourself. Good luck, Rebecca.
Okay.
See you later. Bye-bye. All right, look, after we take a short break, we're going to come back with the answer to last week's puzzler. Do you remember it?
It's in there. I know it's in there. Huh. Just give me one word from the puzzler, and it's all going to come back to me.
All right, I'll go.
A word.
You ready?
Yeah.
Vinny.
Ha! Huh. It was a Latin puzzler. Vinny. Vidi. Vici.
No, you dope. Vinny, as in our cousin Vinny.
Oh, the classic cars.
Right, the classic cars. And we'll have the story of our cousin Vinny and his fly-by-night car sales business and more of your calls, too, right after this short break.
So please stay tuned.
Miss Isetta loved to be wake, drop it everywhere. To work, to church, or the grocery store, she really didn't care. That big old car meant more to her than simply steel on wheels. To anyone who'd bring it up, she'd make it very clear. Says she'd be buried in her Buick, in the driver's seat, facing out the windshield for all eternity. Driving to the promised land in her Buick. Take that Buick everywhere she goes.
And even though Conan O'Brien strikes NPR from his list of potential landing spots whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk...
Yeah, like if you're a teacher with a class of really rotten students you want to punish...
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean...
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzle.
Yeah, go, man.
This puzzler came from my automotive history series, and it was sent in by a fellow named Tom Lilly, and it goes something like this.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
I have a cousin whose name happens to be Vinny, and to be honest, most of the time he's a pain in my butt. And from time to time, Vinny comes across some vintage cars that he likes to flip. That is, you know, buy and then sell quickly for a profit. He never has more than two or three of these around because otherwise his wife is on the phone to the divorce attorney.
Yeah, my wife's had that number on speed dial.
Yeah, and each wife would leave the number programmed in for the next wife. Anyway, one Sunday, Vinny calls the house and says, I just purchased two American-made cars at an auction. You got to come right over and check them out. He tells me that one of them was made in the early 60s and the other was manufactured in the mid-70s. And then he says to me, get this, I don't think you'll be able to tell me which is which.
Get out.
Well, that's what I said. I told him he was nuts. I mean, I grew up as a car crazy kid in the 60s, and I know all the cars from the 60s and the 70s. And I told him, look, I'm positive I'll be able to tell which one is which. He says, okay, $50 says you can't.
Whoa.
I say, wait a minute. Is there a trick here? You're not going to put a bag over my head or anything like that, are you? Vinny says, no tricks. These are real, actual passenger cars. They're not toys. They're made in the U.S. of A, a dozen or so years apart. I say, they're not hot rods or cars with modified bodies of any kind. He says, nope, all original equipment. And I then ask, could anyone have bought these cars? He says, yes, anybody. Are these common vehicles, I ask him. Vinny says, you've seen plenty of them on the streets over the years.
Hmm.
Okay, I said, then let's make the bet $100. And you know what? I'm so confident. I'll tell you from 50 feet away which one was made in the 60s and which one was made in the 70s. He says, You're on, piston puss. I grab my coat and my car keys, and I tell my wife to make a dinner reservation at some fancy place because I'll be home in 15 minutes with Vinny's $100.
You seem a little overly confident to me.
You think?
I think, yeah.
Well, I pull into Vinny's driveway, and of course he's outside waiting for me with that obnoxious smirk on his face, you know?
You mean like this?
Yeah, just like that. I look at him, and I say, tell you what, Vin, let's make it $200. He says, okie doke, and he presses the button on his garage door opener. Now, I'm ready to see a couple of rare American weirdo cars like Nash Ramblers or Studebakers, but when the garage door opened, I saw the cars, my heart dropped, along with my restaurant reservations. All of a sudden, a sure thing was now at best a 50-50 proposition. I had to guess, and if I lost, I was going to lose $200 to this dope. The question is, what were the two cars that he had bought?
I have to say that I have been working on this one all week.
Really? And well, first, that's a lie. That's an out.
Well, not every minute of
this. No, you didn't work on it until 18 seconds ago.
All right, this morning.
No, not even this morning. Right now.
Right now. And I still don't know the answer.
Well, you...
I thought I had the answer, too.
You know, you have elevated yourself from being just an ordinary idiot to, I would say...
A
complete ding-dong. The cars that Vinny had bought were two Checkers.
Oh! Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Checkers...
These are taxis.
Well, in a private, they were made in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and for a while they were you could just buy them if you had a taxi cab.
That's right.
But after a while, private citizens could buy them, and I think the company went out of business in like 1982 or 83. But basically, the cars were unchanged, and the only difference between the early ones and the late ones was the old ones had single headlights, and then in 58 or 59, they went to the double headlights on each side.
And they were all yellow.
There were many colors. You can get any color you wanted as long as it was yellow or red. And that's what he had bought, and they were virtually indistinguishable from one year to the next.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Anyway,
oh boy.
Who's our winner? If you're really new cars, you would never think of Checkers because...
I would never think
because
of
the people who were into cars were never into Checkers.
Of course not.
There's only that lunatic fringe like Bugsy. Or Arlo Guthrie. So anyway, who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Stephen Ragno from Johnson, Vermont. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Stephen is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which Stephen can get a set of four CarTalk reusable shopping bags.
These are a wonderful contrast to the other bags you see in your supermarket, which have uplifting slogans about saving the planet, like that.
Our bags say... A reusable bag from NPR's Windbags.
All right. And my other reusable bag is from a good NPR show.
Well, congratulations, Stephen, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
There's a new Puzzler still to come today. But in the meantime, feel free to call us with your car questions at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Who's this?
This is Simone. I'm calling from Seattle.
Hi, Simone.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I drive a 2001 Ford Escort, and I was very, very excited about getting Chinese food one night.
Would that have been New Year's Eve?
No. Well, I had been held up at the hospital while my friend got her hand repaired, so it had been a long wait, and we were both very hungry.
Yeah, nothing like stress to make you long for Chinese food.
Yeah. And what happened to your friend's hand?
Oh, she was shucking oysters and stabbed herself. So it was kind of like two ruined dinners at the same time.
Yeah, the oysters just don't have that same kind of cachet when they're blooded. Yeah, okay. So anyway, so your friend's hand is all right, we trust.
Yes.
So you went for Chinese food.
Yes, we were headed for Chinese food, and I didn't see a very large curb on one side of the parking lot and kind of ran into it at about 10 to 15 miles an hour.
Oh, so the Chinese food and the hand of the oysters, they're not relevant to the story at all. You could have just told us that you ran into a curb, but this does paint the picture a little better.
Oh, no, it's better, yeah.
It's the finer points.
It's the finer points. So you, what kind of Chinese food had you ordered? You might as well give us all the details now.
I believe it was some fried rice.
Fried rice?
That's it?
Well, I think she got some sesame chicken.
Sesame chicken, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It wasn't that good, actually.
Wasn't that good?
Kind of disappointing.
So did you hit the curb before or after you picked up the food?
I hit it before, so like I pulled into the parking spot, and we looked at the car a little bit. Nothing had fallen off, so we were like, okay. So we come back with the food, and I'm driving, and it starts making this crazy grinding, cranking noise when I start from a stopped position.
Uh-huh.
So now every time, especially when I'm on hills, if I'm starting from a stopped position, it makes this grinding noise, and sometimes it's short, and then sometimes it just kind of goes on and on and on.
Make the noise for us, if you can, Simone.
It's kind of like a...
And this is happening as you're stepping on the gas?
Yes.
If you take your foot off the gas, does it continue?
Well, it only happens when I'm starting from a stopped position.
Right, so it only lasts for the first few seconds.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like you did something relatively harmless, but you should have somebody look at it.
Okay.
It sounds like you may have bent what's called the dust shield. And the dust shield goes behind the disc rotor. And that dust shield is designed to keep crud, like rocks and pebbles and dirt and whatever, from getting onto the brake disc.
Okay.
And so you may have just bent that, and the noise may be there all the time, but it may be getting drowned out by everything else once you get moving fast enough. But just on the off chance that you really did do some damage, like bend the tie rod or damage a ball joint or whatever, you should take it someplace, confess to what you did, yeah, and have them put it up on the lift and check to see if you did any serious damage. Because if you did, you know, for example, and you knocked the thing way out of alignment and you drove it like that, you could chew up your two front tires.
And that's going to run into money.
Right, a lot more than an order of sesame chicken and fried rice. That's for sure. So you won't be going back to this place anymore?
No, probably not.
Yeah. So this was in their parking lot?
Yeah, it wasn't painted. The curb wasn't
painted. So did you inform them when you went into the restaurant that you had hit the curb that wasn't painted?
Well, I would have, but I was about ready to pass out from hunger.
Oh, yeah.
So you just went home. Yeah, right. I understand.
Well, you sound like a good friend, Simone, and find a better Chinese restaurant and take your pal out to get a good meal after her hand got fixed.
Okay.
All right. See you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, this is Chris calling in from Boston.
Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Boston!
Yeah, I have a 1993 Volvo 240 wagon.
Jesus.
It's a car we love, or more particularly, my wife loves it.
Yeah.
And it's been maintenance-free since we've had it until about 3 weeks ago when we got our first big snowstorm here.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it's related, but ever since then, the car just doesn't want to go above 20 miles an hour.
Really?
Yeah, and it feels like it's kind of stuck either in first gear, second gear. You know, it's an automatic, and it just feels like it's not upshifting for, I'd say, the first 5 or 10 minutes you drive it down the road.
Can you hear the engine revving up?
It's revving. The engine's definitely getting faster, but it sounds like it's going to blow up.
Yeah, because it's not upshifting. You're stuck in first gear.
That's what it sounds like, stuck in some low gear.
Yeah.
You probably are. Okay. So you said you've had this car how long?
We've had it 3 or 4 years.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 3 or 4 weeks.
No, we've had it, and it's been perfect until now. And we love it. We'd like it to keep going. It's got 162,000 miles, and that seems like a lot to me, but my wife tells me that, you know, it's only in middle age.
Well, for some cars, it's Geezerville.
but not this one. Not this one. I wouldn't be surprised if you need to have the transmission rebuilt, but the first thing you should do, if it isn't upshifting, you should make sure that it's got enough fluid in it.
Okay, yeah, it was just in the shop before this problem, and they checked the transmission fluid.
Well, make sure they check it again. Maybe during the snowstorm or whatever, you damaged one of the cooler lines. These cars have metal lines that run from the transmission all the way up to the radiator, and all cars have this. That you pump transmission fluid into the radiator. It seems kind of crazy, but you're pumping into a medium that's over 200 degrees to cool off the oil that's in the transmission, because it's much hotter than that.
So, oh, really?
Yes.
Wait, no, is that underneath the car?
Yes, they're underneath the car.
Huh.
So maybe if you were going back and forth over snowbanks or doing whatever you were doing, you may have damaged one of these lines and lost enough transmission oil. okay, so that it won't upshift.
Okay.
So there's a possibility that you're low in transmission oil. There's a possibility that the linkage got knocked out, or what's called the detent cable got jammed.
Okay.
Or the transmission is cooked.
Now, if the transmission's gone, is that a repair that's worth doing?
Well, how are the seats? They're comfortable? They ripped?
They're leather, but they're pretty beat up.
They're pretty beat up.
Yeah.
Mm, because the seats are the next most expensive item on the car.
But how's the car in general?
The engine's fine. You know, we haven't had any maintenance problems with it. The only problem is ever since this started to happen, I've been test driving other cars.
No, you just, don't ever do that.
Yeah, that was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, bad ideas, right. Well, no matter what, though, your wife loves this car, and she wants to keep it.
She does. Yeah, it's a great car.
Well, you know what? Find out what it's going to take to fix it. If it's a few hundred bucks, obviously fix it.
Okay.
If it's much more than that, you know, if it's going to be a transmission rebuild, you're probably talking, I don't know, maybe $1,800.
Okay, so still less than the car's worth, so maybe that's worth considering doing.
Maybe, yeah. And the advantage of having a beater like this, and this is, I would classify this as your archetypal beater, that you can park it anywhere with no worries that someone's going to scratch it or dent it. What do you care?
Or steal it. That ain't going to happen.
Right. You could be lucky and someone could steal it, but maybe if you left the keys on the roof or something. But the nice thing about having a car like this and living in the inner city is that you don't have to worry about it.
Right, yeah. My wife takes the train, and I try to bike to work if I can. So we really like not having too many cars.
Yeah, so fix this thing, even if it does need the transmission.
Okay.
Good luck.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, guys.
See you, Chris.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, we're 1 for 12 today. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yes, my name's Debbie. I'm from Eureka, Missouri.
Hey, Debbie.
And hi. I have a 91 Mercury Cougar with 116,000 miles on it, and when I go over a bump, it makes a noise like hee-haw, hee-haw, and it only does this in the wintertime. We just bought it last summer, so we didn't know it was doing it. So we don't know whether to give this car some hay because it sounds like a donkey, or put gas in it. Well, or put it out to pasture, maybe.
Will it do the hee-haw thing if you're not driving the car but just push down on the fender? Have you tried that?
No, I haven't tried that one.
Well, that's what you've got to try. I mean, it could be something like a dry bushing. It could be a ball joint that's desperately in need of lubrication. And on a 91 Cougar, I'm not so sure that there's anything you can grease after the fact, that the grease may be sealed in at the factory. So you may need to be replacing something in the near future. But you don't know what it did last winter because you didn't have it last winter. So this thing may still be there when the winter ends, if it ever does. But you should take it in someplace because this has the potential to be dangerous.
Really?
Yeah, it could be a tie rod end making this noise, a ball joint, or it could be something like a bushing, which is not so dangerous. But tie rod ends and ball joints, if they're out of lubrication, they can break. And your car is ancient.
Yes, it is.
And things that are old, you know, the rubber boots dry up and crack, and then water gets in there and rusts. And
well, this car, excuse me, did sit out because the person we bought it from was our neighbor, and his daughter drove it back and forth to work, and it was outside all the time.
Aha.
In the snow, in the rain, you know.
Well, that'll do it. We've been doing that to my brother lately, and he looks better, actually.
Looking a little rusty, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Very. But he's got a good tan. Anyway, Debbie, take it someplace and get it checked out because it could be dangerous.
Okay, I sure will.
All righty, see you later.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, look, before we get to this week's new puzzler, we have to take a very quick break.
Wait. We have to answer one more question first.
What's that?
Well, it comes from Bill Figginshoe, who says, when you come back for the third half of the show, one of you always starts by saying, ha, we're back. Why is that?
Well, I'm the one who says ha, and the reason I do it is to wake up my brother.
Yes.
And you can't see it, but that ha is accompanied by a rip-roaring dope slap administered to the right side of the head. It's just so he can snap out of it, and it usually does the trick,
I'd say.
Not always, but usually, you're right.
See, I always thought it was kind of a defiant ha. Like, ha, you thought we got canceled during our break, but we're back. Take that.
No. I mean, I never like the 10th Fate and give NPR any ideas, certainly. But we do have the 10th Fate now, and we do have to take a short break.
All right. And when we come back, What new puzzle will you be springing on us?
Well, this happens to be from my Uncharted Waters series.
Ooh.
And we'll have that and more car questions in just a minute.
I thought it's gonna be a thrill to be like that. With the beautiful girl and be king of the track. But the truth is when all was said and done, it was this Cobra I wanted, the car was the one. It was his Cobra I wanted, the car was the one.
And even though airline passengers look forward to the words, please turn off all electronic devices whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha!
Now what?
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
Mm.
You awake?
Yeah, go
okay,
for it.
Pay attention, because there's a lot. This is from my, what did I say?
Crazy.
Uncharted.
Stupid. Impossible.
Uncharted Waters series.
Bogus?
It might be bogus. Who knows? It was sent in by someone who was just identified as Tony.
Oh, good.
Okay, and I had to add a little obfuscations and whatnot. But this may be a true story. It may not be, but I believe it is. So pay attention. There are a lot of little facts and details and clever little things that you might want to pay attention to.
It's hopeless.
It's hopeless.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. In 1968, a British sailor named Robin Knox Johnston, those blue blood guys always have those interesting names, set off on a voyage around the world race, so to speak. He sailed from England, you know, down the Atlantic, around the coast of South Africa, past Australia, crossed the Pacific, round the bottom of South America, then back up the Atlantic to merry old England, 30,000 miles in 313 days, becoming the first person to sail single-handed, nonstop, around the world. Pretty good, eh?
Really?
Back in 68, sailors didn't have the help of satellites for navigation and communication. Navigation was performed the old-fashioned way, you know, with sextants, looking at the stars, charts, rulers, dividers, and luck. Now, the only form of communication that Robin had was a radio, which was powered by lead-acid batteries, which were charged by a little 3-horsepower gasoline engine connected by a fan belt to a small generator. Got it?
Got it.
And at one point, he tried to start the charger engine for a routine charge of the batteries, but it wouldn't start.
Ah.
Foolishly, he dismantled the engine, cleaned the various parts, reassembled it, and what? Still wouldn't start. Then he decided to read the manual. The engine manual told him that it was essential that he should set the ignition points and spark plug gaps correctly. Each needed to be set at 15 thousandths of an inch.
Oh.
Okay. You ready?
I can see it all happening.
Well,
how's he going to measure this?
Failure to set the gaps correctly would mean that the engine would run poorly and inefficiently, if at all.
Yeah.
Now, he had brought along 35 gallons of gasoline, just enough to run the engine for the 300 or so days that he thought the voyage would last. Okay. If the engine ran inefficiently, he'd run out of fuel and would lose his only means of communication.
Yeah.
And if something went wrong, he'd probably die a horrible and lonely death, sprawled out on the deck with seagulls feasting on his decaying carcass. You know.
He was thinking all this as he's floating around.
Yes. Well, Robin clearly had a problem. Now, he had a carefully selected toolkit of tools on board, you know, wrenches, saws, screwdrivers, and the like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But nothing to measure 15 thousandths of an inch with. What he needed was something called a feeler gauge. Now, for those who don't know about such things, feeler gauges are strips of metal of a given thickness, and printed on them is what the thickness is, you know, to hopefully have one that said 0.015 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And they're used, of course, to measure the gaps between two surfaces, like ignition points. And without a feeler gauge, Robin had just no chance of measuring this gap of 15 thousandths of an inch. He couldn't even begin to guess how big a gap of 15 thousandths is. After all, he was a man of the sea. He knew about jibs and sheet lines and mainsails and fathoms, but 15 thousandths of an inch? Not a chance.
Yeah. Ooh.
So he cursed in frustration and resigned himself to losing his radio and probably dying a horrible and lonely death on the high seas. Oh, did I mention that?
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
Well, that night, as he sat down with his diary to write about the day's events and his certain demise at sea, he had an inspiration and he figured out how to measure that gap of 15 thousandths of an inch using the various things that he had on board. How did he do it? Now, if you think you know the answer,
wow.
or if you stayed awake for the whole puzzle.
I like it. I like this puzzle.
Engrave it on the bottom of a Jura Capresso NF5 Deluxe Automatic Coffee Center in Ristretto Black, featuring 18 bar pressure, professional grade conical burr grinder, patent pending zero energy technology, two frothing options, of course, automatic strength settings with user friendly rotary override dial, water filtration system, automatic cleaning cycles, and an economy size carton of sleep aids. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
If you have a question about your car, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi, this is Joseph from Monterey.
Hey, Joseph, what's up?
I have a car that's a vampire, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Really?
92 Accord with 380,000 miles on it.
How many?
380,000.
Cool.
Woohoo!
Rescued it from a junkyard. I've gotten 3 good years out of the car. I recently did a tune-up where I replaced the plugs, the wires, the cap, the rotor.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is this. When it sits in direct sunlight for more than an hour, it won't start. It'll crank strongly. My battery light doesn't come on for some time, you know, unless I completely overdo it.
Yeah.
And I forgot to tell you, I replaced the fuel filter up front as well. My semi-pseudo mechanic friends tell me that there is another fuel filter in the back somewhere that might be causing my problem, that my problem might be fuel related.
It is fuel related, but it ain't that filter.
Okay.
Because I don't even know what that filter is. No, there's one. There's one in the tank, but that isn't it.
Okay.
And what I think it is, and you can verify this easily enough because you know how to test for fuel pressure. Do you know how to do that under the hood? There's a rail that has a Schrader valve
on it,
and you can press on that valve. And when this car does not start, and you depress that valve, you will find that there's no fuel. And the reason there's no fuel is because your fuel pump relay is not working. And this is a classic. This happens, I don't know if it happens anymore, but it has happened to Hondas, especially Accords, for many, 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 many years. And we first discovered it, what's the word? In desperation. Once we had a customer with the same problem and we tried everything and we sold them, you know, a fuel pump. We sold them a tune-up. We sold them a condo in Harvard Square. And none of that stuff worked. And we finally decided what else could it be. And we ascertained that it was fuel. And we were going to take the tank out, da-da-da-da-da. And we finally decided to try the fuel pump relay. And voila.
Bingo.
It fixed it. So that's what you need. And the fuel pump relay is tucked up under the dash. It's right above your brake pedal. And when you go buy the new one, I don't know, they're like $30 or something like that, you'll know what it looks like, and you'll be able to find the old one. And that's going to fix it, Joseph.
I appreciate
that. And then
you're
good for another 380,000 miles.
It rescued from the junkyard, and I'm not trying to take it back until it falls apart on me.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Good luck, man, but that's going to fix it.
Thanks again, fellas.
My brother will personally guarantee this. See you later.
Good luck.
All righty, thanks, fellas.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, Click and Clack.
Hi.
This is Katie calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Hey, Katie. How are you?
Well, I have a question for you that involves both my marriage and the laws of thermodynamics.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
So here's the deal. My husband owns a 2006 Mini Cooper S. And he occasionally likes to park on the street.
Uh-huh.
And our street is a little bit on the sketchy side in terms of the paving. And so he managed to park his car in what was, at the time, a giant slush puddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we went away to vacation for, you know, over the holidays, and we came back. And my husband's Mini Cooper S was frozen up to its rims to the street.
All four rims?
Two of them.
Two on one side?
Two 911 side, on the passenger side, yeah. So we're currently in possession of a $30,000 Royal Blue paperweight.
Okay.
And we really need some help. My husband has tried pretty much everything. He's tried a pickaxe. He's tried a hairdryer. Yeah, he's had some friends in the physics department that want to bring their heat gun, which gets up to 600 degrees Fahrenheit, but we're afraid we might melt the street. and we really need some help here because I can't keep shuttling him to and from work, guys. I can't do it.
So when he tries to back it out,
yes.
The wheels don't turn?
Do the wheels turn, honey?
No.
Evidently not.
The back wheel does, but one of the wheels is just like stuck in there, just like lodged. And
well,
really tried it by putting it in gear and stepping on the gas?
Yeah, I believe so. You've tried really putting it in gear and stepping on the gas?
Put this knucklehead on the phone.
Okay, all right. Get on the phone, sweetie. Okay, I'm putting him on.
All right.
All right.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Katie's husband. What's your name?
I'm Peter.
Hi, Peter. So you parked in this puddle.
And it's frozen. The puddle's probably 4 or 5 inches. It's up about a third of the way up the rear wheel. It's a front-wheel drive vehicle.
Yes,
so
yeah.
The front wheels spin fine, but...
Oh, so the two front wheels, even the one in the ice, has broken free.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you just have one wheel to get loose.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you access all the wheel nuts?
Not all of them very, very easily, no.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, you could try. Do you know any of your neighbors who, for Thanksgiving, did one of those deep-fried turkeys? Because what
we
you
wanted
need...
to deep-fry turkey for a long time.
Well,
but...
oh, this is a perfect opportunity. You got to go out and buy the cooker. If you buy that cooker, you hook that up to a propane tank, and I have one that will boil. You ready for this? 5 gallons of water in 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Couldn't be better.
So if you could pour boiling, you're not going to melt the tire by pouring boiling water.
Right.
The tire can get a lot hotter than that. Not to mention the fact that it's going to reach equilibrium with the surrounding air and ice.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So you need to boil up. In fact, if you could get a couple of these cookers going, you could boil up enough water. Imagine if you had 15 gallons or 20 gallons of boiling hot water.
Yeah, we actually brew beer too, so we have some big old pots around that we could do that with.
There you go. That's exactly what you need. So you need to boil up as much hot water as you can, and maybe throw a couple of shrunken skulls in there too, just for good measure. I don't know.
And you haven't tried to jack it up from the back.
Oh.
Well, I'm worried that I guess a jack would be.
What's the worry about now?
I considered towing it, but I was wondering what would win, the ice or the axle. You know.
Well, that's why I thought if you could unbolt the wheel. Then you could actually lift up the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Tow it out of there. Put the spare on.
There is no spare tire with the.
All right. Fine. Well, you could leave the tow truck holding it up while you then try to dislodge the frozen wheel by working on it from both sides. See, now you're forced to work on it pretty much from the curb side. Right, but then you could go at it with pickaxes and all kinds of drills and God knows what. I mean, don't let this defeat you. Ooh, here's another idea.
Sledgehammer.
Well, no, an electric drill.
Ah.
Uh-huh.
An electric drill, being careful not to drill into the rubber.
That would be nice.
But if you could drill close enough to it and then pour boiling water into that.
Percolator first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That would minimize you might be able to do this with a tea kettle.
You'll be in traffic this afternoon.
All right.
Yeah. I would try the drill first, and the drill will easily drill through ice. You may have to use a carbide drill. No, any drill will drill through the ice.
Right.
Drill through the ice, drill a whole bunch of holes right alongside the rubber.
Uh-huh.
And then fill up those holes with boiling hot water.
Uh-huh.
And then get in it, and you might at this point you need people to push.
Yeah, well, part of the problem is that the ice behind the car is so slick you can't get any traction pushing.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, well, you may need to push it with something, another vehicle.
Right, okay.
And you may need a good running start, maybe. Peter, what's more important is the blow to your ego here.
Yeah.
I mean, you sound like a guy that can take it, but you know what? Forever, you are going to be known as Peter the Bozo that parked in the ice. I mean,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I just, you know, your wife, I can hear her laughing from here.
Yeah.
Can we talk to Katie again?
Sure.
All right.
Thanks for setting my husband straight, guys. I really appreciate it.
We told him to just go buy a new car.
I don't know if you guys realize this, but a couple weeks ago, you took another call, also from a lady in Colorado. She called in asking about the Mini Cooper. You talked her out of a Mini Cooper and into my car, the Volvo S60, and I haven't stopped giving him crap about it ever since.
So how do you intend to capitalize on this this situation?
We've only been married for 6 months.
Oh, this is going to color your entire married life.
Oh, yes.
Peter,
run! My dad is super excited about this little story, let me tell you.
Yeah, no. Yeah, this guy is not going to be able to put forth one single idea that's going to have any kind of, pardon the expression, traction whatsoever.
Well, I mean, I love him dearly. But, you know, he's one of these guys who's really, really smart, but, you know, can't brew coffee on his own. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why he married you, Katie.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because you are the practical one in the family. He's the scientist.
Yeah, exactly. He's the math and science guy, and I'm the girl who, you know, doesn't park her car in the middle of an ice
rink. Well, you are a perfect pair, and I predict you'll have many, many, many years of marital bliss.
So that's a no on the heat gun, then.
No, the heat gun will work, but we told him to... don't worry, we gave him some ideas, which we're not at liberty to divulge to you.
Okay.
See you later.
Is this going to affect the value of my home?
Maybe.
The retail value of my house is not going to be...
No, not to. Everything's going to be fine. He'll have that car out in no time.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
See you, Katie. Bye-bye. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Lime Rock, Ham Hock, Beef Stock, Hot Walk, Cheese Block, Grilled Crock, Double Bock, Ad Hoc, Round the Clock, Nosh and Squawk, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our PR specialist is Hugh Lyon Sack, assisted by Lotta B. Essen. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. Our wardrobe advisor is Harley Fitzhugh. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the cold-blooded meter maze in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
Yeah, ditto. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1004, tiptoe through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, do you remember what happened after I taught my son to drive?
I do. He sandwiched your 63 Dodge Dart between a snowplow and an ambulance.
Exactly right. I still get shivers thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could have been badly hurt.
No, I mean about the loss of my car.
Oh, well, now we have a whole area of the website devoted to teenagers learning to drive.
Right. It includes advice for parents on teaching a teen to drive.
And advice for teens on how to deal with crazed parents who are teaching you to drive.
And even a downloadable new driver's contract.
That's the teen driver's area.
On the homepage all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though dogs bury their masters' radios in their backyards whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.